ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर वन टेक्स्ट फोर ना हि अल्पार्थो दयस् तस्य विदुरस्य अमलात्मनः विदुरस्यामलात्मनः तस्मिन् वर्यसि प्रश्न साधुबादो अपबृंहितः साधु बादोपबृंहितः साधुबादोपबृंहितः नहि अल्पार्थो दयस्तस्य नहि अल्पार्थो दयस्तस्य विदुरस्य मलात्मनः विदुरस्यात्मलात्मनः तस्मिन् वर्यसि प्रश्न साधुवादोपबृंहितः नहि अल्पार्थो दयस्तस्य विदुरस्यामलात्मनः तस्मिन् वर्यसि प्रश्न साधुवादोपबृंहितः नहि अल्पार्थो दयस्तस्य विदुरस्यामलात्मनः तस्मिन् वर्यसि प्रश्न साधुवादोपबृंहितः Certainly, alpa artha, small, unimportant purpose, udayaha, raised, tasya, his, vidurasya, of vidura, amala atmanaha, of the saintly man, tasmin, in that, variyasi, highly purposeful, prashnaha, question, sadhubada, things approved by sense and sages, upabringhitaha, full with. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Saint Vidura was a great and pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore his questions to His Grace, Rishi Maitreya, must have been very purposeful on the highest level and approved by learned circles. Please repeat after me. Saint Vidura was a great and pure devotee of the Lord.
Saint Vidura was a great and pure devotee of the Lord.
And therefore,
his
questions to His Grace Rishi Maitreya
must have been very purposeful.
On the highest level,
and approved by learned circles.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Questions and answers among different classes of men have different value. Inquiries by mercantile men in business exchange cannot be expected to be highly purposeful in spiritual values. Questions and answers by different classes of men can be guessed by the caliber of the person concerned. In Bhagavad Gita, the discussion was between Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna, the Supreme Person and the Supreme Devotee respectively. The Lord admitted Arjuna to be His devotee and friend, Bhagavad Gita 4.3. And therefore, and what is that shloka, who remembers? Where Krishna declared Arjuna to be His friend and a devotee. Okay, very good. How many of you know? Raise your hands. Okay, very good. And how many should know? Okay. And how many will make an effort to know? Very good. And therefore, any sane man can guess that the discussion was on the topic of bhakti yoga system. Actually, the whole Bhagavad Gita is based on the principles of bhakti yoga. There is a difference between karma and karma yoga. Karma is regulated action for the enjoyment of the fruit by the performer. But the karma yoga is action performed by the devotee for the satisfaction of the Lord. Karma yoga is based on bhakti or pleasing the Lord, whereas karma is based on pleasing the senses of the performer himself. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, one is advised to approach a bona fide spiritual master when one is actually inclined to question from an elevated level of spiritual understanding. A common man who has no interest in spiritual value has no need to approach a spiritual master just as a matter of following fashion. As a student, Maharaj Parikshit was serious about learning the science of God, and Sukadev Goswami was a bona fide spiritual master in the transcendental science. Both of them knew that the topics discussed by Vidura and Rishi Maitreya were elevated, and thus Maharaj Parikshit was very interested in learning from the bona fide spiritual master. Nahi alpartho dayastasya vidurasya malatmanaha tasmin bariyashi tasmin bariyasi prashna sadhu bhadu vabrinhita. Saint Vidura was a great and pure devotee of the Lord, and therefore his questions to His Grace Rishi Maitreya must have been very purposeful, on the highest level and approved by learned circles. So, who is questioning? Parikshit Maharaj is questioning Sukadev Goswami. So here we can see the nature of a pure devotee. Parikshit Maharaj is about to leave his body. He knows that there is only 7 days left. And he is actually preparing for that. He is preparing himself to leave his body. Generally, what do the common people do when you get to know that you have only 7 days left? Generally, people will try to find out the best doctor, right? Or if there is some way that some treatment that can cure him. And but a person who is materially detached and spiritually advanced or spiritually inclined, his tendency will be to be aware more about how to leave the body and how to fix the mind on Krishna and so forth. But Parikshit Maharaj, from this question itself, we can understand what is Parikshit Maharaj's level of advancement. Parikshit Maharaj is asking, please tell me, what happened between Vidura and Maitreya? Apparently it sounds like he is interested to know about some activities of two great personalities. But actually, what is Parikshit Maharaj's inclination? What is Parikshit Maharaj's attitude at that time? What is the purpose of his asking the question? He knew that through this discussion that went on between Vidura and Maitreya, he will get the perfect spiritual answer. Because he knew when these two personalities met, they did not discuss about any mundane topic. They did not even discuss about ordinary spiritual topic. They discussed about the highest spiritual topic. Therefore, through these questions and answers between advanced devotees, we can understand what spiritual reality actually is like. He was completely convinced about that, that that discussion must have been so wonderful. Because Vidura, by nature we can see Vidura is so detached. And at that time what happened? Vidura was also in a state when he became completely detached from everything material. Even if he had a slight bit of attachment, that attachment was gone. Because he was insulted and he was so badly insulted by Duryodhana that he just right there he left his home. And then while traveling, he came across Maitreya Rishi. So when he came across Maitreya Rishi, then he found out what actually happened. I mean, he quite questioned about the actual spiritual subject matter, which is he wanted to know about. So Vidura Maitreya Sambhad will reveal a very interesting aspect of spirituality. So we should be interested about. So from this we can understand that our degree of advancement will be justified, will be determined by the question we ask or the question we have in our mind or the way things go on in our minds. Like, as a devotee, we come across things that had never would have occurred to us before. When we are not a devotee, we never even thought of considering those matters. Like as a devotee, sometimes we become aware that there is so much envy in our hearts. And envy is the last snare of our material bondage. Envy is the last knot with which we are tied down to material bondage. Therefore, at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it has been pointed out that when the heart becomes free from envy, and this actually meant, free from envy meant free from everything else. All the enemies of the heart. What is the enemies? What are the enemies of a spiritual progress? Shadaripus, well, we have six enemies. What are those six enemies? Yes? And? Mad and Matsarya. So Matsarya, what is the English word for Matsarya? That's Matsarya is the Sanskrit word for envy. The Parama Nirmatsaranam Sata. So when the heart becomes free from envy, Prabhupada is pointing out, that means the heart has become free from all other impurity. That means lust, kaam, krodh, lust, greed, anger, illusion and pride have already been removed from the heart. So envy is the last and most difficult one to conquer. Because the cause of our fall down is our envy of Krishna. Why we lost our situation in the spiritual sky and fallen into the material nature. Prabhupada repeatedly points it out. It is because of envy. And envy towards whom? Envy towards Krishna. We could not tolerate that Krishna is the greatest. We wanted to become the greatest ourselves. We could not tolerate that Krishna is the supreme proprietor. We wanted to become the proprietor also. We could not tolerate that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. We wanted to be the supreme enjoyer also. And the result is, now we are in a material nature. Plenty of opportunity now to become the greatest. To become the supreme proprietor. To become the supreme controller. To become the supreme enjoyer. Yes, you have plenty of opportunity to become the supreme proprietor, supreme controller, supreme enjoyer. But the problem is that more we try to do that, the more we suffer. This is what Maya's trick is. This is Maya's punishment is. We try to enjoy, what does Maya give us? Not even a punch, a kick. Punch can be tolerated, but a kick right on the face. It's one thing, it's painful and it's humiliating. So you try to become the greatest? Yes, you have an opportunity to try to become the greatest, but what will you get? A solid kick up in the face. You want to be the supreme proprietor, fine, try to become the proprietor, another kick. You want to become the supreme enjoyer, another kick. So this is the cause and the effect of our envy towards Krishna. Due to our envy towards Krishna, we have fallen down into the material nature. Due to our envy towards Krishna, we are suffering. Therefore, envy is the last word. And we can see, what is envy? Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave a very beautiful definition of envy. The definition of envy is to become happy at others' distress and being distressed at others' happiness. Paro sukhe dukhi and paro dukhe sukhi. When we see that the others are suffering, we become very happy. And when we see that others are enjoying, then we suffer. Why he is enjoying? Why not me? Now, before we became a devotee, these things never really occurred to us. But as a devotee, it occurred. We begin to detect that there is envy in our hearts. And it's coming out in that way. When I see that others are suffering, I feel happy. And when we see that others are enjoying, I become sad. And this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying in his Sharanagati, in the Daino aspect. Amar jivan sada bhavi ratun nahi kothu. পরসুখে দুঃখী সদা মিথ্যাভাষী পরদুঃখ সুখকর, পরদুঃখ সুখকর। আদার সাফারিং গিভস মি গ্রেট ডিলাইট, পরদুঃখ সুখকর। অ্যান্ড পরসুখে দুঃখী, হোয়েন আই সি আদার্স আর এনজয়িং, আদার্স আর হ্যাপি, আই ফিল স্যাড। নাও দ্যাট ইজ হোয়াট এনভি ডাজ। নাও ডাজন্ট ইট হ্যাপেন সো অফেন? ইউ নোটিস দ্যাট ইট হ্যাপেন্স টু আস, অ্যান্ড অ্যাজ আ ডিভোটি উই ডু নোটিস দ্যাট। অ্যান্ড দেন হোয়াট ইজ দ্য প্রেয়ার? দ্য মোর অ্যাডভান্সড উই আর, the more intense will be our prayer to Krishna. Krishna, please let me get rid of this. Why it's happening to me? I can't free myself from this very difficult influence, very difficult mentality. But you please help me. So this is the prayer of a devotee. One doesn't become a pure devotee overnight. But going through his life, continuously trying to detect the impurities in the heart and purifying those impurities, he becomes a pure devotee. Of course, the pure devotees are there. Sometimes pure devotees come and take birth on this planet to establish Krishna's mission. But people in general, we all are impure in this material. And it is not that just by getting a title we'll become a pure devotee. Oh, I am now a spiritual master, so I must be a pure devotee. Because everybody is thinking that I am a pure devotee. No. Rather, that will become a trick. That we have to understand that's a trick of mind. The moment we think that we have become a pure devotee, mind will get us. Rather, we have to always remember there are so many impurities in the heart. Let me deal with that. Let me not become complacent and think that everything is all right. Everything is wonderful. I'm getting so much worship. I'm getting so many facilities. I have got so many followers. Now I must have become a pure devotee. The more this distinction, adoration and profit comes, we have to understand the Maya is going to become stronger and stronger. The more worship we have, more vulnerable we are towards Maya. More adoration we have, we are more vulnerable. More, in this way, we have to see our vulnerable situation all the time. But if we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna will give the protection. Therefore, the prayer of a pure devotee, including a pure devotee, is always, Krishna, please, please protect me. Even Prabhupada is praying to Krishna, Krishna, please protect me that I do not fall into Maya. Prabhupada is teaching us. Haridas Thakur is praying. Lord Brahma himself has taken the birth in a Muslim family in order to become humble. His prayer, Lord Brahma, after he offended Krishna by stealing the calves and the cowherd boys, Brahma felt so guilty that he not only begged forgiveness from Krishna, but he prayed to him that in your next pastimes, please don't give me an exalted birth. Let me be born in a very, very degraded, low class family, so that I won't have any pride of my situation of being born in a very high class. So humble, Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family, and he always considered himself to be so fallen. He considered himself so fallen that he would not go anywhere near Jagannath temple. Haridas Thakur did not even go inside Jagannath temple. He would just offer his obeisances to the flag and the chakra on top of Jagannath temple from a distance, from a great distance. So humble. Haridas Thakur is so humble that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would take prasad and invite all the devotees to come and sit down, Haridas Thakur will just stay far, far away. He will consider himself to be so fallen that he would stay far away. And when Mahaprabhu would call him, Haridas, come here, sit down, take prasad, Haridas Thakur said, no. Let everybody take prasad and I'll take the prasad. And then we can consider Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, such an exalted personality. Such an exalted personality that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes were revealed in his heart and he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was not present when Mahaprabhu was performing his pastimes. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was not in Navadvip with Mahaprabhu. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was not in Jagannath Puri with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami was not with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was traveling in places of pilgrimage. But how could Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami write this Chaitanya Charitamrita with such detail? Let us now remember, how did Valmiki write Ramayana? Do you remember how Valmiki wrote Ramayana? Even before Lord Ramchandra's pastime. Before Lord Ramchandra enacted his pastimes, Ramayana was written by Valmiki. How? The pastimes of the Lord was revealed. He was such a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra that the pastimes were revealed in the heart. Just as one watches movies or TVs, he was seeing the pastimes of the Lord in his heart. And that's what he wrote. These are the signs of a pure devotee. But Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, how he is displaying his humble situation. I am more fallen than a worm in the stool. Jagai madhai hoite muishe pavishto. I am more fallen than jagai and madhai. What a humble disposition. But who is he? He is one of the most exalted devotees of the world. This way we can see that more one makes spiritual advancement, the more humble he becomes. When one becomes advanced, he never thinks that he has become advanced. When one becomes advanced, he doesn't think that now I have become a pure devotee. No, rather he considers that I'm so fallen, I'm so degraded. And is it an artificial thing? No. That is how he really feels with him. And he prays to Krishna, Krishna, please protect me. Krishna, please allow me never to leave the low shelter of your lotus feet. And so these are the signs of an advanced devotee. And in that advanced stage, when a devotee asks questions, those questions become most relish, those question and answer sessions become most relishing. There are two reasons for why we ask questions. One reason for asking questions is to dispel the doubts or to remove the ignorance. One purpose of asking questions is to know. What we do not know, we ask questions about that and we get And another purpose of asking question is to relish the pastimes of the mind. I'm talking about the transcendental question, the questions pertaining to transcendental nature. So when great personalities like Vidura meet Maitreya, when great personalities like Parikshit Maharaj meets Sukadev Goswami, when great personalities like Shaunaka Rishi meets Suta Goswami, those questions they ask is simply to relish the pastime. Sometimes we notice that we don't really have any question because we already know. Therefore we don't have any question. But transcending that situation, we come to another situation when we question, just to relish. Please tell me what happened when Vidura met Maitreya, as Parikshit Maharaj is asking Sukadeva Goswami. And at one point, actually, Prabhupada told me that Vidura was more advanced than Maitreya. Although Vidura is asking the question, but actually Vidura is more advanced than Maitreya. Why? Because the intimacy that Vidura had with Krishna, which means that Vidura is a more intimate devotee of Krishna than Maitreya. Ultimately, the consideration of one's advancement is in one's attachment to Krishna. The more attached one is to Krishna, greater it is. So, these personalities are eternal associates of Krishna. Vidura, Arjuna, and what to speak of associates of Krishna in Vrindavan? What to speak of the gopis of Vrindavan? They are the highest of all devotees. And devotees' activities are difficult to understand. Like we are seeing, Radharani is worshipping Suryadeva. Radharani is worshipping Katayani. Radharani is apparently worshipping different demigods. She is offering all her respect, but spiritually we are the highest. When you look at the spiritual calculation, the elevation according to one spiritual advancement, then who is the great, most elevated spiritual personality? Srimati Radharani. Spiritually situated personality. Of course, most elevated spiritual personality is Krishna. But then, is the consideration of Krishna's devotees. Krishna is the greatest. But next consideration is the greatness is according to one's devotion to Krishna. In Brihad Bhagavatam, which is the first part, it has been very graphically described how Radharani is the greatest devotee. But apparently, Radharani is just a cowherd woman, not very educated. Really, she never went to school. And what does she do? Throughout the day, she churns butter, make dahi, make ghee and butter. She is cooking for Krishna. She is tending the cows. But spiritually, she is the most advanced personality. So this is how we have to recognize the ultimate consideration of spiritual advancement is one's attachment to Krishna. Our knowledge and our wisdom is not important. As far as knowledge and wisdom is concerned, yes, Maitreya Rishi is very advanced. The Rishis are very advanced. Very advanced because they are very learned, very
wise, they are very learned, they are very, they are profound thinkers, rishis. But devotion is the most important consideration, not wisdom. Somebody may be very wise, but if he is not attached to Krishna, what's the value of his wisdom? On the other hand, somebody may be illiterate, but if he is attached to Krishna, then that is, then he is most advanced. There have been so many devotees who are actually apparently illiterate. One such example is Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was not educated, he was illiterate, I mean apparently. But he was such an advanced devotee that the greatest scholar of that time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, accepted him as a spiritual master. Was Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur looking at the scholarship of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj? Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur advised by Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, looked only at the devotion. So we can see from that, in order to become an advanced devotee, in order to become a good devotee, we do not have to become a big scholar. In order to become a good devotee, we simply have to become a big lover. Now do we have to become very scholarly in order to become a good lover? No. Scholarship has nothing to do with love. Love is just the warmth of the heart. The tenderness of the heart, the feelings of the heart. And that anybody can cultivate. Old, young, rich, poor, wise, ignorant, man, woman, irrespective of all this consideration, anybody can develop this love for Krishna. So this is what we have to understand, and here we are seeing Prabhupada is pointing out that one's spiritual advancement will be determined by the way he asks questions about the spiritual subject matter. And the whole process, the entire process is based on question answer. Bhagavad Gita is based on question answer between Arjuna and Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is based on question answer between sets of individuals like Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami, Shaunaka Rishi, or the sages of Naimisharanya and Suta Goswami, and Narad and Prachina Bharati, Narad and Prachetas, Vidura and Maitreya, and so forth. All question and answers. So, but these questions and answers are very, very important because they are in relation to the spiritual topic. And they are the very foundation of a spiritual. Yesterday, in relation to Krishna going to Vidura's house, I was reading from Mahabharata, some chapters, and I found that everybody was very excited about that. Should we again continue from there? I was telling Narayan yesterday, I never seen the devotees so absorbed in a class like yesterday. Okay, yes, by serving the devotees, we can get rid of our ego by placing ourselves below the devotees and allowing ourselves to be directed by the devotee, we can get rid of our ego. Yeah, the process of devotional service will purify our heart of envy. So out of that, service to devotees is, of course, one very important thing. Because we tend to become envious. Because we are surrounded by devotees, we can become envious of devotees. Right? Now how to get rid of that tendency? By serving the devotees. And that helps. All the other processes, chanting, pure chanting, will help. We may chant submissively. By chanting, you see, we will recognize our insignificant position. The more we get to know Krishna, the more we become aware of our insignificant position. And to become free from envy, first of all, to become free from envy, we have to get rid of our false ego. Instead of thinking that we are big, we have to recognize that we are small. The more we recognize that we are small, then yes, we will become free from envy. And as you said, yes, service to the devotees is one very important thing. But that also has to be done in a humble state of mind. Like sometimes we may render service thinking that we are doing the devotees a great favor. I'm serving you chapatis. If I didn't give you chapatis, you'd be starving. So think, recognize how, what a great well-wisher I am of you. So if we, you see, like the service is being rendered, but if the attitude is not right, that will not. So it's a matter of you being in a proper state of mind. Like internally, internally you have to be free from false ego.
Is it correct? Is Krishna put the rules or setting the rules and observing the rules?
Well, but what if somebody becomes envious of his guru? Yes, this is the right. You see, the guru is the teacher, and the guru guides the disciple on the spiritual path. And as one advances in spiritual path, one becomes free from the unearthliness and begins to get the taste. These are all actually preliminary things. Like Bhagavatam at the beginning is pointed out that unless one is free from envy, one will not be able to understand Shrimad. The first qualification of Srimad Bhagavatam is that one has to be free from envy. So that is the prerequisite. But then again, like the other thing is that as we read Srimad Bhagavatam, we become free from envy. Even though we may have envy in our hearts, but by reading Srimad Bhagavatam under proper direction and guidance, we become free from envy. Yes, sir. Three questions. Well, it depends what's the state of one's advancement. There's no need to artificially display something. Because the artificial display of something will not work. It will rather become detrimental. You see, if we are not naturally free from certain traits within ourselves, but if we are artificially doing it, we'll do it only for the time being. But then, you grow up. Because, you know, if you do it artificially, then, you know, the grievances, the resentment keeps on painting up within you. Because it's artificial. And for how long can you keep it inside? You know, at some point it just comes out. Why do you think devotees bloop after so many years of service? Because they're practicing devotional service artificially. They're doing things artificially, not naturally. That's why it's painting up in the form of resentment, in the form of frustration. Therefore you will notice when somebody leaves the movement, he becomes so inimical, so critical to him, because it has been gnawing him within his heart for so many years. Therefore, execute your devotional service happily, not artificially. It shouldn't be a burden. It should be a delight. And that's why a right association of devotees is so important. Because in the association of devotees, you begin to appreciate it, you begin to relish it, you begin to enjoy it. So, we do not have to become artificially rather, let's do it naturally. But at the same time, some sort of restraintment, some sort of restraint should be there. That is the Vaidhika. But it should be done in a proper, under proper guidance. And even if somebody leaves their association of devotees being and becomes resentful, sometimes we notice that after that, when he comes back, he becomes humble. Because now, by going through that, you know, all that was, you know, the steam inside that exploded, now is that it's out? Okay. And as I was mentioning the other day, you see, nature has its way, hard way of, you know, purifying us. Like our mentality when we are in the prime of our youth, and our mentality when we are old, are not the same. Our attitude, our aspiration, our mentality is not the same. Therefore, doesn't matter in whatever circumstances we are, the consideration is that remain attached to Krishna. Just remain attached to Krishna. Do whatever you're doing, remain attached to Krishna. And that is the meaning. Do whatever you do. You like to do something, do it. But do it for Krishna. The problem is, you like to do something, but you are doing something else. Because you think that that is what is actually real advanced state. That is what the real. But what is the bottom line? The bottom line is you are looking for distinction, adoration. But what difference does it make how others are seeing us? What really matters is how I am here and how Krishna is seeing me, not how the rest of the world is seeing me. How Krishna is seeing me, that's the most important consideration. And when we allow ourselves to go in that direction, then everything will be. Therefore, one of the first consideration is that don't execute your devotional service artificially. Do it in a natural way that is making you appreciate it. Then there won't be any question of leaving it at any moment. Because when you appreciate it, then you'll be relishing it more and more as you continue the process. Answers your question? Okay. What's that? You said three questions. This is just one? Okay. Okay. If you have any doubt, question, ask the other devotees. And that's why you need a spiritual master. Mind is there. And, you know, spontaneous devotion is there. Now to figure out which one is the mind and which is the spontaneous attraction. Therefore, you need to verify it from a spiritual master. So what does a disciple do when one takes a spiritual master? He says goodbye to his mind and he replaces the mind with the spiritual master's instruction. No mind. No matter, never mind. Alright? And then, as you make advancement, as you become adept in the process, then the spiritual master actually begins to guide us from within, as Chaitanya. The spiritual master from the heart. But as long as the spiritual master is present, let's take advantage of the spiritual master. When the spiritual master becomes apricot, then we can listen to Chaitanya. But that also must be done at an advanced stage. And if there is any doubt, should be verified by other advanced devotees. Daina aspect. You see, Sharanagati has got six aspects. Daina, Atmanivedan, Gopritya Varan, Avashurakhi Vekrishna Dishash Palan, Bhakti Anukul Matra Karjero Shikar, Bhakti Pratikul Bhav Varjana. Out of these, the first is Daina, which is the humble disposition. You see, we are Sharanagati, we are taking shelter. Can you take shelter if you are puffed up? So in order to take shelter, even of Krishna, we have to get rid of our puffed up attitude and recognize how small, how fallen, how incompetent and incapable we are. And that is the dynamic. Yeah. Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, maybe we can do that. Because I decided not to go to the West as I was supposed to go in April, end of this month. So I'll be here for another month. So I can give a seminar. Okay. Krishna's friendship with Arjuna is in Hastinapur, and Krishna's friendship with Uddhava is in Dwarka. So, from that calculation, like degree of intimacy, Krishna's friendship with Uddhava is more intimate than Krishna's friendship with Arjuna. In Dwarka, Dwarka is above Hastinapur. Right? And in Dwarka, Uddhava is the most intimate devotee of Krishna. He is the most intimate. But then, when Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan, when Uddhava saw the advancement or intimacy of devotion of the residents of Vrindavan, Uddhava realized how insignificant is his devotion. And therefore, he desired to be just a creeper. Vrindavane kimapi gulmataroshani. I wish to become a creeper in Vrindavan so that I can get the dust of this gopi's lotus foot. this is how different levels of advancement have been described by our acharyas. Let me ask the question in such a way that I'll be recognized as the most advanced. It's not that. The question is asked pranipatena for the question, sincere inquiry in the humblest. Just like Sanatan Goswami, such an advanced devotee, but what is he asking Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Kiyami amare kandi jarita. Who am I and why am I being afflicted by the threefold miseries of this material nature? So please tell me what will be beneficial for me. Right? Now Sanatana Goswami is not asking, please tell me what happened between Krishna and the gopis in the groves of Vrindavan. That is not the consideration. The consideration is sincere. And what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu responding? He responded such a wonderful way. So here we have to understand that these devotees are asking these questions for our benefit. Through these questions and answers, common people will benefit. But at the same time, they are also relishing. When Sanatana Goswami is asking, who am I? Why am I being afflicted by the threefold miseries of the material nature? He means it. It's not that he is artificially asking a question. He means it. The question can be anything of any nature. But the intensity, sincerity, these are what is going to determine the state of his heart. It is not that those who are asking about Radha Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are the most advanced devotees. It's not that. It's not something that's artificial enough. Rather, somebody with all sincerity asks the question, I get angry so often. Please tell me what I should do. Right? If this simple question, which is very basic, if with the intensity of sincerity to ask the question, that will become the indication of that transcript. Yes, Sony? Those reply was not very so that's why I didn't really delve into that. So the point is that just we can question ourselves. Like say if I have something, should I keep it for my enjoyment or should I offer it to Krishna? A simple question like that. Well, don't take it personally. I'll ask a simple question. Don't take it personally. The money that you have in the bank, are you keeping it for yourself or are you ready to give it to Krishna? Right. So that's an honest answer. Now that indicates that our love for ourselves and our family is greater than our love for. Isn't there? But if someday when our love becomes greater for Krishna than ourselves and our family, then we'll offer everything that we have to Krishna. And people do that. But my point is, don't do it artificially. When you develop that love, then only you do it. If you are, as I was replying her question, Like if you do it artificially, then it will become counterproductive. Do it naturally. So the consideration is not what you're doing for Krishna or giving to Krishna. The consideration is how much love you have developed for Krishna. That is the most important consideration, and that is actually the consideration. Alright. Okay. Yes. You see, Krishna Dharma Prabhu has done that already. It's a beautiful translation of Mahabharata. Like this book is done by a devotee from the Krishna Dharma. Goswami's books, yeah, now if we consider, you know, Goswami books are Ujjain projects. Actually, many devotees are asking me. But the thing is, my answer to that is, actually sometimes some of my godbrothers get very upset with me. For example, Jayadrita Maharaj gets really upset with me. He thinks that I should be just translating his books. But my answer to that is, there are many devotees who are actually translating and able to translate those books. But what I am doing here, not many devotees can do. Therefore I am doing. Now the consideration is it important what I'm doing here? What do you think? Now if you all think that this project is not important, I should translate Goswami literatures, I am prepared to do that. Actually I had been translating for how many years? 77 to 95. And that was my main service. So for 18 years I've been translating. But then in 95 I embarked in Abhacharan. And when Abhacharan was complete, now I embarked in Ujjain project. And let us see what happens now. If someday Krishna says go back to translating the Goswami literatures and if he gives enough indication, yes, really I'll do that. And if you can take over this project and handle it, fine, then I will just go to Barnagar Road, that farm. Often I think that, you know, I can make a kutia on the bank of Gambhi River. It'll be so wonderful. Okay. To tell you frankly, I haven't been able to read Krishna Dharma Prabhu's Mahabharata fully. Yeah, this I read a long time ago. That is by Kamala Subramanian. Very beautifully written. Simple. But prior to that, I read the Bengali translation of Mahabharata. And prior to that, my aunt used to read Mahabharata to us when we were children. Oh yeah, right. Krishna Dharma is better. Because it's written by a devotee. She is not, devotee of some sort, but doesn't have, she is not a disciple of Prabhupada. Or she is not an ISKCON devotee. She may be a devotee, but she is not an ISKCON devotee. That makes a big difference. TV serial. Yeah, maybe Chiranjeev will do that. I am actually setting up Chiranjeev so that he can pursue that direction. He is very talented in that way, and he has his passion. We are setting up our production unit. Yeah. And I'll give him the assistance. Really, what we'll do is, anyway, let us see. When we do the TV serial on Mahabharata, that will be it. So it will take probably some time. That's why actually I sent Chiranjeev to Calcutta. Should it to give him all the help? Sagar he didn't meet Prabhupada, but he came and spent some time with us in Mayapur. Ramananda Sagar came to Mayapur before doing Krishna, spent some time. And the credit that has been given is for the paintings that they use. And they may have taken some aspects of Prabhupada's books. Okay, so should we end now, or should we just read up from Mahabharata? What should we have done if there was prasad? Choice between reading Mahabharata and prasad? Okay, I'll ask tomorrow. Okay, so yesterday we read Duryodhana's response when when Dhritarashtra and all the elders of the assembly tried to dissuade Duryodhana from the war. Then, you remember Duryodhana's reply? Okay, I'll read that part. Duryodhana felt it was time he spoke his mind. Calming himself, he rose from his seat and looked at Krishna. Although you speak out of concern for me, O Madhusudan, you nevertheless criticize me alone. Why, O Keshav, do you praise the Pandavas and accuse me without properly understanding the situation? You, Vidura, Bhishma, Drona, and my father. And my father have all found fault with me, but not with any other. Yet in this matter, I do not find I have acted in any way unworthy. I have not committed the slightest fault. Even after much introspection, I see nothing wrong. The Pandavas lost their kingdom at dice. They were not forced to play that game. Even when their wealth was returned, they agreed to play a final game and were thus exiled. Was that my fault? Why do they regard me as an enemy? Even now, although they are weak and incapable, they threaten the Kurus. Duryodhana looked at Karna, who clenched his fist in support. The Kaurava prince continued, "We are powerful Kshatriyas and will not bow down to any man out of fear. I do not see anyone who can face the Kuru army in battle. O Keshava, why should I give anything to the Pandavas under threat of war? Rather, it's my duty to fight. If I lay down my body in the battle, then I will achieve a glorious destination in my next life. What Kshatriya born in a noble family would avoid battle out of fear of the enemy? No self-respecting ruler would bow to one who threatened him with harsh words. I am not afraid of the Pandavas or Madhava. I will never give them any part of this kingdom. It now belongs to Dhritarashtra, and so it will remain. We are simply his servants. Although he once gave away that which should not have been given, we have rectified his error. When I was a child and dependent on others, the Pandavas were mistakenly given the kingdom. We will not make the same mistake again. Duryodhan paused and glanced at his audience. He rested one hand on his hip and the other on his sword hilt. He concluded, "O Keshava, this is my reply. As long as I rule this kingdom on my father's behalf, I will not give the Pandavas even that much land which can be pierced by the point of a needle." Duryodhan sat down, his eyes fixed on Krishna. Karna lifted his huge arm smeared with red sandalwood paste and placed it over Duryodhan's shoulder. Vidura looked at the two men and shook his head sadly. Dhritarashtra was the only one who could prevent the impending calamity, but the old monarch remained silent, hearing everything, seeing nothing. If the king desired peace, as he said he did, he would have to restrain his son forcibly. Duryodhan was not going to listen to him unless he was prepared to back his words with action. He would have to have the prince arrested, otherwise his words were empty. Reflecting a moment, Krishna said, "You obviously desire the endless sleep of a hero, and so shall you have. Wait just a little longer, then there will be the massacre you desire. O fool, you think you have no blame. Not everyone here knows the truth. But everyone here knows the truth. You were jealous of the Pandavas' prosperity, and you plotted with Shakuni to defeat Yudhishthira at dice. Who else could have treated his brother's wife as you treated Draupadi? Draupadi's chest of noble birth and is well behaved. She is dearer to the Pandavas than their own lives. Still you insulted her before all the Kurus." Krishna reminded Duryodhan how Dushasan had addressed the Pandavas as they left Hastinapur, and how even before the dice game, the Kurus had antagonized them. To plead innocence, you simply evidence of his arrogance. Krishna was stern as he continued, "If you do not return their kingdom to them willingly, you will have to return it to them when they defeat you in battle. You have committed so many evil deeds towards the Pandavas, and now you try to appear innocent? You have been repeatedly ordered by your elders to make peace, but you ignore them. Only by peace will everyone be benefited, including yourself. That it appears otherwise to you is a sign of your lack of intelligence." Krishna's speech has convinced even some of Duryodhan's brothers. Dushasan in particular had begun to favor peace. Remembering Bhima's vow to tear out his heart, he addressed his elder brother, If you are so foolish that you will not willingly make peace, then the Kauravas will bind you hand and foot and offer you to Yudhishthira." Duryodhan stormed out of the hall. Then Duryodhan's 100 brothers and all of his ministers followed him. After they had gone, Bhishma said, "One who abandons virtue and profit out of wrath will soon be sunk in an ocean of trouble. This prince lacks wisdom and knowledge. He is influenced only by anger and greed. O Janardhan, I think of Kshatriya race is about to be annihilated, for his brothers and ministers follow him out of folly." Krishna turned his lotus-like eyes towards Dhritarashtra and said, "This is the fault of all the Kuru leaders. You should have restrained Duryodhan by force. O sinless man, it is time for you to act. Listen as I describe what is in your best interest. You all know how Kamsa, king of the Bhojas and Ugrasen's wicked son, was rejected by the kinsmen. In the end, I killed him. By this one act, the Jadavas, Andhakas and Vrishnis all became happy. One man should be sacrificed for the sake of a race. The race for the good of a town, the town for the benefit of the country, and the earth for the sake of the soul. O Bharatas, after binding Duryodhan, Karna, Shakuni and Dushasan make peace with the Pandavas. In this way, the Kshatriyas may be saved." This made Dhritarashtra even more uncomfortable. From Duryodhan's birth, his advisors has insisted he rejected his son. He had refused. Now he was tasting the bitter fruit of his mistaken judgment. He was too attached to his son. And that attachment had not weakened over the years. Duryodhan took advantage of his weakness and ignored him. It seemed Duryodhan could be checked only if he were executed or at least imprisoned. Now Krishna was suggesting that they carry this through. How could he contemplate such an option? He thought of Gandhari. Maybe the prince would listen to his mother. He decided to ask her to enter the assembly. "O Vidura, please go and bring the queen here. Then order my son to return to the assembly. Perhaps the wise Gandhari will be able to persuade him." Vidura left the hall and soon Gandhari entered. Maidservants leading the blindfolded queen to her place next to the king. After being seated and informed of the situation, she addressed Dhritarashtra. "Your son is full of lust and greed. Only by your blessings has he obtained this kingdom, which he in no way deserves. O king, although you know he is sinful, you support him out of fondness. For this you are as much to blame for the present situation as he is. It will be difficult now to check Duryodhan." As Gandhari finished, Duryodhan returned, strode angrily across the hall, bowed slightly to his parents and sat down. He was still breathing heavily, his eyes red. Gandhari spoke gently, "My dear son, listen as I offer advice meant only for your benefit. It is my most earnest wish that you make peace with the Pandavas. Follow your elder's guidance, my son, and reap the fruits of virtue. You want to control the earth only because you are full of sense desire and anger. You do not know that only by overcoming those two impulses can a man attain success in life. One who is controlled by his senses cannot control a kingdom. Only after conquering ourselves can we conquer the earth. Otherwise, it is not possible."
The controlled senses are powerful enough to kill a man. I'm sorry, the uncontrolled senses are powerful enough to kill a man, just as untrained horses can kill an incompetent driver. Prosperity always attends the king. Prosperity always attends the king who has mastered his passion and who stands steady to chastise offenders. Acting only after careful consideration, he who gives into desire and wrath will lose everything in the end. Such a man cannot even attain heaven. Therefore, strive to control your senses, for in this lies your greatest good. Gandhari spoke from her own realization. Since the Pandavas' exile, she had begun to practice asceticism. Feeling guilty for the way the Kurus has insulted Draupadi, she fasted and performed constant sacrifices. She practiced penance, praying that her licentious son might somehow be brought to his senses. But that seemed impossible. His heart was steeped in greed and envy. But he could not recognize these qualities in himself. Imploring, the queen continued, "By joining with the virtuous and self-controlled Pandavas, you can enjoy the earth for a long time. What will you gain by fighting with them? Here is Krishna, who performs powerful acts with little exertion. He is able to destroy all the kings alone. What then will happen when he unites with Arjuna? You have heard his advice again and again. One who ignores his well wishes will only lament, but his enemies will rejoice. O child, your father gave the Pandavas their due share, afraid of a dispute. Now you are enjoying the fruits of that gift. It was those heroes who subjugated the world. Surely half the kingdom can satisfy your needs. Do not invite destruction by igniting a dispute with the Pandavas. They have suffered enough these last 13 years. Give them back what is theirs and save the world from a disaster." When Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, Bhimsen, Dhananjaya and Dhrishtadyumna come together in anger, all creatures will be destroyed. Therefore, quench your greed and act with wisdom. This is my advice to you, dear child. Duryodhana snorted. He had heard it all before. Everyone praised the Pandavas and criticized him. There didn't seem to be anything he could say to convince them otherwise. Seeing that his mother had finished, he again left the hall. It was time to act. He went straight to Dushasana's palace. His brother was sitting with Karna and Shakuni. Slapping his thigh in anger, he said to them, "It seems that Krishna is swaying everyone's mind towards the Pandavas. He is urging the king to have us arrested. I'm worrying about this. Krishna is very persuasive." Duryodhana looked at Dushasana. Krishna even turned your mind in the hall. Dushasana looked ashamed as his elder brother went on. "We must quickly execute our plan to capture Krishna. Even as Vishnu sees Bali, we will grab Krishna and bind him. When the Pandavas hear of his capture, they will lose both heart and energy for the fight, just like serpents whose fangs are broken. Let us do it swiftly before the old man gives everything away again." Dushasana and Shakuni agreed, but Karna was uncertain. "I do not believe we'll be able to capture Keshava, O king.
If you wish to try, I'll do what I can to help, but I doubt we can overcome him. Unlike Duryodhana, Karna felt an anger towards Krishna, whom he respected as a great warrior. Krishna had killed many powerful fighters. According to the rishis, he was an incarnation of the original Supreme Person. Karna thought it lightly. He only joined in the plot to capture Krishna out of friendship for Duryodhana, but he had little faith it would succeed. Duryodhana laughed away his friend's doubts. Krishna will be unprepared for any move, for our move. He has come without weapons and not expecting to fight. We can catch him off guard and have him bound and taken away before even he realizes what is happening. The prince had no doubts about his plan. Perhaps it may fail, but there was nothing to lose. He had already declared open hostility against the Pandavas. The fight may as well start immediately. And if Krishna could be captured, then the odds would shift dramatically to his favor. With the still uncertain Karna, he left to make the arrangements. In the hall, Satyaki had watched Duryodhana closely. He noted that as the prince left, certain key Kuru leaders had also departed. It was obvious that Duryodhana was about to try something. Satyaki knew that he had already stated his intentions to capture Krishna. It seemed he was about to try. Leaning across to Krishna, Satyaki whispered, "I think Duryodhana will now try to seize you. He has taken a contingent of warriors out of the hall with him. I am sure he will try to take your life. O Keshava, this wicked man has lost all sense of prosperity and propriety." Krishna smiled and reassured Satyaki. "Do not fear, my friend. All the kings on earth together could not capture me. Speak of Duryodhana and see what he decides should be done." Satyaki addressed the old king. "It seems your foolish son intends to make good his threat to capture Madhava. O leader of men, he and his evil counselors, overpowered by desire and anger, seek to do something exceedingly mean. Yet they cannot possibly succeed any more than children can take hold of a blazing fire." Vidura had also noted Duryodhana's intention. Rising from his seat, he said, "O king, your son's time has come. They are preparing to do something which cannot be done. Even so, it is sinful beyond all limits to even contemplate it. Standing against Krishna, they will die like worms falling into a fire. He will send them all to Jamaraj's abode as a lion destroys a flock of sheep." Krishna laughed. "Let them try. Maybe this is how this problem will be solved. But do not worry. I will not do anything for which I can be censured. Although I could slay them all outright, I will not do so. In any event, they have already been killed by their own sinful desires. By coveting Dhritarashtra's wealth, they have weakened themselves and will soon be ruined. O king, let Duryodhana do as he likes." When Krishna stopped speaking, Dhritarashtra's voice boomed through the court. "Bring my wicked son here at once, and bring his ministers with him. I will again try to bring him to the path of righteousness." Once again, Duryodhana was brought back into the hall. He entered with Karna and Dushasan just behind him. Again he strode across the hall and took his place. Dhritarashtra was angry. "O you
O you of inhuman conduct and extreme sinfulness, having as your support only men of small deeds, you want to perpetrate an act which is too difficult to accomplish and which is heinous beyond limit, like a child wanting to hold a moon. Like a child wanting to hold the moon, you desire to capture the lotus-eyed Krishna. All virtuous men would condemn you. Anyway, it is not possible for you to carry this through. Even the gods could not take Keshava prisoners. O fool, give up your absurd notions and come to your sense immediately. Duryodhana was seething with anger. He said nothing. He had already ordered his men to come into the hall as soon as Krishna rose to leave. Everyone else may be afraid of the Jadavas, but he was not. The prince glanced across at Krishna. He sat smiling at ease. Soon everyone would see just how strong he was. Vidura, clearly remembering how the Kurus had violated Draupadi, could not stand the thought of Krishna receiving similar treatment in the same hall. He spoke again, trying one last time to influence Duryodhana. O Bharat, listen as I remind you once more of the many demons who have been tried and failed to overpower Krishna. The hugely powerful Narakasura, who was the son of the earth goddess herself, lived for thousands of years surrounded by his vast forces. Krishna killed him easily. He was destroyed. The five-headed Mura, who was struck fear into the hearts of the gods. When he was a child, he killed Putana and the evil wizard Arishta and Dhenuka. When he was 7 years old, he held Govardhan Hill aloft with one hand. Vidura named various other asuras and kings whom Krishna had defeated. Finally he said, Krishna is the doer of everything. He is the cause of all causes. From him comes all power and opulence. He can do anything without the least effort. O Duryodhana, you do not understand Govinda. His prowess is incomparable and it will reduce you and your followers to ashes. Attempting to take him prisoners is ludicrous. Krishna looked at Duryodhana. O Kaurav, out of folly you think me to be alone and vulnerable? O one of small intellect, see now as I show you the truth. Here are all the Pandavas, the Vrishnis and the Andhakas. Here too are the gods, the Adityas, Rudras, Vasus and great Rishis. Duryodhana could take no more. He jumped up and pointed at Krishna. Seize him now. At once his soldiers began running into the hall from all its entrances. With swords and bows at the ready, they closed in on Krishna. Krishna laughed as he did. His body suddenly flashed like a lightning. He began to grow in size and various gods issued from him. Brahma sprang from his forehead and Shiva from his chest. Lokapala sat on his arms and Agni appeared from his mouth. Then Indra and the Marutas appeared along with hosts of Gandharvas, Jakshas, Rakshasas. From his two eyes came Balaram and Arjun, who stood on his left and right side. Behind him stood Yudhishthir, Bhim and the twins. And behind them were the Vrishnis and Andhakas, headed by Pradyumna. Krishna's mace, discus and club weapons appeared, blazing brilliantly. His pores emanated light, sparks and clouds of smoke. The sight was too frightening. Almost everyone in the assembly closed their eyes. Only Bhishma, Drona, Vidura and Sanjaya were able to look upon Krishna as he manifested his universal form. the rishis also gazed upon him, folding their palms and offering prayers. The sky resounded with celestial drums and flowers showered from the heavens into the hall. Sanjaya described the event to Dhritarashtra, who said, "O Krishna, you are ever doing good for the world. Therefore, it is right that you should bless me with the eyes to see your form. O best of the Jadavas, I pray for the sight to see you. O Kuru leader, let your eyes have sight," Krishna replied. And immediately Dhritarashtra could see him standing within the great hall. He also saw numerous gods approaching Krishna and worshipping him with Vedic mantras. Outside the hall, a fierce wind blew. Huge waves moved over the ocean, and thunderclaps reverberated in the sky. The earth trembled. The hall was in a tumult. Krishna withdrew his mystical form and again assumed the two-armed form. Taking permission from the rishis, he left the hall, holding the hands of Saptaki and Kritavarma. The rishis, headed by Narada, rose from their seats and vanished, their minds astonished. Dhritarashtra again became blind, and he sat in silent amazement. As Krishna left, the Kurus followed him with folded hands, like the gods following Indra. Only Duryodhan and his ministers remained seated. They were struck with wonder and unable to do or say anything. Their plan to capture Krishna was obviously futile. Outside the hall, all the natural disturbances had stopped and a gentle breeze was blowing. Krishna mounted his chariot and prepared to leave. As he sat upon his golden car, spread with white tiger skin, Dhritarashtra came out of the hall, led by Vidura. He went up to Krishna and said, "You have seen the influence I wield over my son, O Janardhan. You have seen everything. Nothing has been hidden from you. It is not proper to blame me, O Keshav, for I desire only peace. I have no wicked intentions against the Pandavas. You have heard me speak to Duryodhan and seen his response. I have done my best." Dhritarashtra was surrounded by the Kuru elders. Krishna looked at all of them and said, "You have all witnessed everything. How that uncultured man walked out, even as he was receiving instructions meant for his good. You have also heard the rulers of the earth state that he is powerless. With your permission, I will now return to Yudhishthira." Krishna sat down with Saptaki and Kritavarma on either side of him. Daruka urged on the horses and the chariot moved on. The Kurus watched it move along the broad highway, cheered on all sides by crowds of citizens. Krishna ordered Daruka to take him back to Vidura's house. He wanted to speak once more to Kunti before he left for Virat. Going before his aunt with Satyaki, Krishna touched her feet and told her what had transpired in the assembly. Kunti was not surprised. She had not expected Duryodhan to listen. Fearing that Yudhishthir might be too forgiving, she asked Krishna to exhort him to fight. She knew he would be loath to fight with the kinsmen and elders only to win a kingdom. As a Kshatriya princess, Kunti had been educated in the rules and conduct for warriors. She spoke for some time with Krishna, citing the rules and making it clear that the proper course of Yudhishthira was war. Her sons should harbor no doubt about it. Again reminding Krishna of the prophetic voices which had foretold great things for her sons at their births, Kunti said, "Let it be as the divine oracle predicted. O Krishna, my sons must now fulfill their destiny and take control of this earth. They will not achieve it through peaceful means, nor can Draupadi's honor be restored unless my sons fight. For me, this is the most compelling reason for fight, for war. They must avenge their wife. They have not freed themselves of that obligation. They failed to protect her in the vicious assembly at the dice game. They must now rectify this wrong. Kunti bowed down and touched Krishna's feet with her hands. Standing again, she concluded, "O Keshava, tell my sons that I am well. Go now on your auspicious way." Krishna stood up to leave. After walking respectfully around his aunt, he bid her farewell and left the room. Outside, he found Bhishma and the other Kuru leaders waiting to see him off. Krishna bowed before them, exchanged farewells, and mounted his chariot with Saptaki. Then he headed for Hastinapur. The Kurus watched the chariots sped towards the city's southern gate. Urged on by Daruka, Krishna's horses seemed to leap into the sky again and again. In a short time, he was out of sight. The Kuru chiefs turned and headed towards the king's palace. Krishna's peace mission had failed. War was certain. Sri Sri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Gaur Premanande.
Yes.
You see, that's why, you see, Mahabharata is not the ultimate. Srimad Bhagavatam is. You see, Mahabharata, it is revealing the Karmakanda. It is actually taking one to the Karmakanda, or it is meant for less intelligent class of people. Right? It is not, Mahabharata is not meant for the pure devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam is. Therefore, Mahabharata has, you know, as a kind of moral, you know, consideration. Moral consideration is more prominent in Mahabharata. Now, from a devotional point of view, like, what you see, if the Pandavas, if the other Pandavas went to the hellish planet, that was simply to deliver the hellish. The creatures of the hellish planet. They didn't go there to suffer. Can a devotee of the Lord ever suffer? And in this respect, we can give an example. Like, consider what is the worst country in this world? One of those African countries. Like, say, okay, say Ethiopia or Somaliland, you know, where, you know, all kinds of brutality is going on. And now, that country has the American embassy. So when the American ambassador is sent to that country, does he become subjected to what's going on in Somaliland? No. He is taken care of by the American government, even though he is in that hellish country. Right? Similarly, if a devotee is sent to some place by Krishna, he doesn't go there as an inhabitant of that place. He goes there as the ambassador of Krishna. And Krishna always takes care of you know, his men. But generally, because the less intelligent class of people will not understand the glory of pure devotional service, so when they hear that somebody went to hell, they think that somebody must be suffering in hell. That is their understanding. And the Duryodhan is going to heaven. Yes, they died in the battlefield and they reached the heavenly planet. But the thing is, after all, what's the heavenly planet? The heavenly planet is also part of the prison house. It may be a first-class prison, but it's a prison house. It's being in a prison. But where does Krishna's devotees go? Krishna's devotees go to where Krishna is. That's why, you see, we have to read Mahabharata with a pinch of salt. Because there are many things in Mahabharata which is not going to tally with the description of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.